Follow me down this deep, dark hole.
Welcome to New Horror Express, your now fortnightly podcast, chatting to the best indie talent the horror genre has to offer. In this episode, we're going to be talking to British director Kevin Chicken. We talk extensively about his debut feature, Perfect Skin. We talk about the long production history, the development of the idea of the movie, the casting of the picture. We talk about one of the stars of the picture, Richard Brakes, Kevin's directorial influences. There's a lot of stuff in there, but I won't chat to you too long. Instead, I think we'll go straight to the interview with Kevin. Hi, Kevin. Welcome to New Horror Express. Good to have you on the show.
Thank you for inviting me.
Not a problem. So you're... film, your debut feature, Perfect Skin, recently debuted at Arrow's London Fright Fest. How was your Fright Fest experience? And it seemed to pick up from Twitter and different things I've seen seemed to pick up some pretty decent reviews. So what was your reaction to the response the film got as well?
It's been really nice, actually. It's great to get the first festival done in a good way, in a positive way. You know, it was, when you've done a film, we've made a film, you sit there for ages, you play it to cast and crew, this, that and the other, but to actually put it in front of a real audience was great fun. And the reaction of people afterwards was really good. Reviews, like you say, have been very positive. And the people who run Fright Fest are a really nice bunch as well. But my only downside was that I didn't get to see any of the other films which I really wanted to. But apart from that, it's just been great.
What were the films you most wanted to check out?
And the Apocalypse seems a lot of fun. I really wanted to see that one. The Ranger I'd like to see because it's everywhere. I want to see how good it is. It's got a punk ethos, which I think sounds really fun and interesting. Mm. Control possibly as well was one of the others. Oh, and the Hitler Bigfoot film seemed quite interesting just for the title alone, but that got great reviews as well. So yeah, there's a few. So I'm hoping to catch some other festivals we get into.
Excellent. I've also be talking to the Hitler Bigfoot director as well soon.
Do you have any idea what it's about?
So I still can't. I'll dig into more about what it's about then.
I'll listen to the podcast and I'll hopefully find out.
Excellent. So you directed and co-wrote this film. Yes. What was the process? How did you come up with the idea? What attracted you to making this story?
I've worked with my co-writer Doosan before. We'd written a film called Squatters, which is another horror, we started on, and then we came up with this idea, so I kind of put that one to one side at the moment. But we had a good working relationship. But I think the idea for this was much more mine than Doosan's initially, because I was watching a documentary about extreme body modification and extreme tattooing one night, probably about 6 or 7 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what it was. It's one of those things, you know, when imagery just sticks with you and it gets kind of out of your head. And I think it's went on for weeks. And I kept thinking back about this film. I think there's two really strong things. Firstly, I think it's the idea of people having a completely different view of what beauty can be, and the way people altered themselves with implants and the idea of change the structure of their faces. I mean, it was that kind of extreme. Yeah. So people tattoo their whole faces, you know, which most people just be horrified by. But, you know, these people find, you know, obviously think it's a, you know, they're not doing it to make themselves look unattractive or ugly. You know, they're doing it because that's the way they want to look, or that's how they feel about themselves. So I think that was absolutely fascinating, that side of it. And also, I think there's something, also there's something about the level of pain that makes you really wince. You know, it's that other thing, you watch a horror film, I'm a big horror movie fan, you know, you see some heads get chopped off and arms getting chopped off and insides coming out, and you kind of go, ooh, and it's good fun to watch those sort of films, but it kind of distances you from the level of pain. And I think there's something about the level of pain in Perfect Skin, which is 90% of those things are needles and hooks and things that people do to themselves, like just body suspensions, that you can really relate to that level of pain. And I think that's one of the things that stuck with me as well watching that. You know, it's like it's incredibly visceral, and I think that's why Perfect Skin, some people say it can be a bit of a tough watch, you know, but I think it's very, you know, it really draws you in. That level of pain is something you completely understand, so when it's happening, you're right there with her, apart from being distant. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that absolutely makes sense.
I think that's what drew me to it. And then I think Jason and I started working on it. And very quickly, I think we structured the story going, well, look, how about if we, you know, because we talked about that, you know, the body modification as a starting point. And then we kind of went, well, what if it's like a Frankenstein story, but instead of being science, it's art. And that was the starting point for getting the story structured. And getting a characterized, you know, characters. It's like, you know, it's like someone's, it's one man's obsession to create something that he thinks is beautiful.
Yeah.
It's not, and the pay, the, you know, things that he does to her, kind of a, you know, that tattooing and the body modification isn't something he's doing because he wants to torture her. He's doing it, but he thinks it's making her more beautiful, basically, or he's creating a work of art.
All right.
Yeah. I think that's possibly, I think, what some people don't quite not get about the film. I think in terms of when they look at it, you know, I think a lot of people, in terms of the reaction to the film, have said it wasn't anything like the torture porn film I was expecting. I've heard some people say it's actually quite beautiful, and, you know, the characterization, and people, you know, people actually understand Bob's character, the tattoo artist in the film. I think, you know, though, you know, they're not rooting for him. People have sympathy for him and an understanding of what he's trying to do. Because actually, you know, apart from anything else, I think tattoos that were created are beautiful. And, you know, I think the way she looked to the end is actually really incredibly stunning. But, so I think people are surprised that, you know, although it's a very tense watch, you know, it's much more character-led than led by any sort of...
Yeah. Because some of the stuff around the movie suggests that it might be that type of movie. It might be in that kind of hostile type ballpark of that kind of torture porn thing. But obviously,
yeah, I think quite a few people have mentioned that. You know, it's really odd because it's just a, you know, I think people, even ourselves, agents like to make little shortcuts in terms of how you describe a film. You know, so I'd always say it's more like Frankenstein than it's like hostile. Mm-hmm. But having said that, there are two scenes in it that are incredibly, incredibly strong, shall I say. And but he's not doing it to torture them. In his head, I think he feels he's creating something beautiful. But I don't want to give too much away. But I think...
Not.
Yeah. a couple of scenes are, you know, quite extreme. And, you know, I've had people say that it's really hard watching, but compared to most horror films, you know, there's not an awful lot of deaths in it or murder, you know, there's not an awful lot of extreme violence. But I think there's a feeling, I kind of think there's a feeling of dread, a strong feeling of dread in the film.
There's not a lot of, there's not necessarily a lot of horror movies that deal in that area of body modification. I suppose probably the most famous one in the last kind of 10 years or whatever is American Mary. Was that an influence? And was there any films that particularly influenced you in making this movie?
I haven't seen American Mary yet. So there's another film which one other reviewer brought up, which is called Tattoo. It stars Bruce Dern, which apparently has a very similar theme to ours, which is a tattoo artist who abducts a woman as well to create a major tattoo. So, you know, it's not an original idea. I mean, someone apart from that reviewer mentioned the tattoo film before, but I've kind of been deliberately not watching them, because I think anything like that, you'll make decisions going, oh, I can't use that now because it's a bit too close to something or other. And I don't think there's, you know, it's like how many zombie films have been made in the last 2 years, you know, and they're all very similar. I don't think we've done anything wrong in having similar themes, but I just think if you start watching films that, you know, you haven't seen already, that people go, oh, that's a bit like, could be a bit like yours, that you're making decisions based on having seen those, you know. And I think I just wanted to clear my head and just carry on, you know, that thought I had and make my film.
Yeah.
That other thing. But there are other films that had really strong influences in it, and in quite a few funny ones in a strange way. There's a strong Shining influence, although it's nothing like The Shining in one, what happens to one of the characters. It's just something that always made me laugh in The Shining. But if I tell you, that will be a big spoiler.
Right.
But the films that really influenced me, but probably like 1960s and 70s psychological thrillers. It's like my favourite film ever is Psycho.
Right.
And I'm a big Hitchcock fan, so also like films like Frenzy, which is another big influence of Psycho, like Psycho. Also, 10 Rillington Place, I think tonally I really like that. Silence of the Lambs, I think, although I've got big love for all the big universal horrors and, you know, things through from Evil Dead to Texas Chainsaw and things like that, I think I've got a particular love of a good psychological horror. I think they tend to kind of stick with you a little bit longer. I don't know why, but, you know, Psycho, I think once you've seen Psycho, you can never forget it.
I absolutely. I mean, that's, it's one of the all-time classics, and it's, you know, it's regarded as that for a reason. You know, it's a movie that definitely sticks with you. Once you've seen it.
Have you seen Frenzy recently, which is one of my favourite Hitchcocks, and it's very dark?
I've only seen Frenzy once, and it was a while back. It's probably a film I should revisit. I remember really liking it, though.
I think it's worth a revisit, because I think it's still got probably one of the most disturbing rape scenes in a film ever. But it's just, again, it's very much character-led, and I like the way that he plays with having a central lead character that isn't necessarily that likeable, you know. And I think we kind of did something similar in, you know, Perfect Skin. Our lead female character isn't hugely likable to start with, but you know she goes on quite a journey that hopefully you're well with her by the end of the film. But, you know, I think all the films that I really love, you know, also things like Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, you know, Silence of the Lambs, I think I like films that have got really strong characterful villains, for want of a better word. You know, it's like Psycho is, you know, it was just incredibly interesting for, you know, a psychopathic villain. Same with, you know, Silence of the Lambs, same with Whatever Happened to Baby Jane. I think I like those, something that's really character-led in terms of its horror.
Yeah. And talking about the characters in the film, the lead, the villain, the villain is played by Richard Brakes, who is a great character actor, and has probably most people know for as Joe Chill in Batman Begins, or as Doomhead in Rob Zombie's 31. And you know, if you want a sinister character, he's a great guy to get. And so how did that relationship come about? How did you end up casting?
I think we've got our lead female character. We've got Natalia quite a while before. I can go into that later. But we looked at a couple of actors, and we'd actually done a test film with another actor a few years before to help raise the money for it. But he became unavailable, so we had to start looking around again. And it's the agent. His agent showed me Doomhead, and from that moment, I was like, right, this actor will just go really, really dark, really deep, you know. And he's just, you know, he seemed an incredibly brave, strong performance, you know. So I thought, that's great, but also we want someone who, you know, can also be likable, you know, and you can keep your sympathy all the way through the film. So I think initially I was like, this, I've got a meeting, because that's just an outstanding performance. There's part of me that went, oh, but, you know, can he do likable as well? You go and meet Richard, and he's just an incredibly likable guy. You know, he's very quietly spoken. He's really friendly, lovely, intelligent human being. So I think from that moment, we sat down, we had a good, you know, he'd read the script, and we had a few hours good afternoon's conversation about it, and we're both, you know, exactly, you know, in tune, I think, with where we wanted to go with the film. You know, he was exactly the same as me. He didn't want to take it down the torch porn sort of direction. It, you know, it was much more about the character. And we were both like, yeah, this is a really tough job, but if people still have sympathy for Bob at the end of this film, then, you know, we've done a good job. You know, it's hard to do that with the things that he does to catch you in it. And Rich does that, and he does it brilliantly. There's a couple of moments in the film, you just like, it's just a tiny little look, you know, and it breaks your heart. You just like, it's just superb. So anyway, it's an experience I'd like to repeat, working with Richard. He's fantastic.
Yeah. It seems like I was reading up a bit about the film, and it seems like it's taken a while to come together. On the website, it was saying it started production in 2012, so
yeah, so
it's been quite a long process from the beginnings to screen.
This, you know, so I give a warning to people about producers. We had one producer who kind of we got involved with, and he was he's kind of recommended by someone, but he you know, he got a couple of IMDb things, and you know, he loved the project, and he was like, yes, I can raise all that money, that won't be a problem, blah blah. And we signed a contract, and we were kind of tied to him for a good couple of years, and kind of got further and further down the line, and money wasn't appearing. He was going, yeah, don't worry, it's just like, you know, just before production, no one's going to put it in until we're ready to go. So we got everything in place, got ready to go, and he basically had about a tenth of, or less than a tenth of the money that he was meant to have raised. You know, we've got everything up and in place and cast. That's why I've had Natalia on board for quite a while, because she was ready to go at that point. You know, and it was that's a lesson to all. Don't sign it up with the producer until they show you the money first. So, yeah. So that held us back a couple of years. And I think we were both so gutted at that point, because the producer, Fiona Campbell, is actually my wife. And I think we're just both so broken down by that process. I think we just stopped for about a year, and then we regrouped and then started raising the money again. So yeah, that was a big chunk of time that took out of us, I think, really.
Yeah. And but while you were off for that, before you were off for that year, you already had your lead actress Natalia on board, and she just came back when you were up and running again.
We did, yeah. Natalia's great. I mean, she was Natalia's sort of an unknown actress, although she's started picking up a few little awards here and there for other work that she's doing, but she's brilliant. And she came just out of an open cast here. I think for the part casting for the part Katya, we wanted ideally someone Eastern European, but we left it open to English people as well, or British people to come in and wanted to do an accent. But yeah, we had a big old casting for that, but she was head and shoulder above everyone else. She did one of those casting, my background's been commercials, I've directed and edited loads of commercials. You quite often get it, you watch a performance by someone and you go, are they actually doing anything? You know, because you're kind of watching it live and you're looking at them, and then you go back and you watch it on playback and you see the subtlety in the performance, and you're just like, that was brilliant. You know, and that's what Natalia had from the word go. And her part is in, you know, I think she's been, well, actually she's got one review that mentioned her, but I think she's been a little bit under-mentioned, you know, and it is because Richard's performance, you know, is in a way, you know, he's got the villain as a standout character in it. But, you know, her performance throughout the whole film is incredible. It's quite a journey she takes her character on. Yeah. And the pair of them, you know, watching, you know, being my first time making a movie, I think that was the thing you really appreciate the actors' art and craft, is the way, you know, when you're jumping around slightly different timescales here and there, how they've got to be, their character's got to be at exactly the right place at that time in terms of performance, you know, and emotion. And that's incredibly hard to do. And they're both spot on with that the whole time. You know, it's quite something to watch, because they're both going on quite a journey, and they're not in the, you know, the same emotional place at the beginning and the end. You know, it's quite a journey for both of them.
Yeah. I suppose when somebody's acting big, you know, it's a big performance, you know, sometimes it's hard to overlook the subtler performance, the counterfoil performance. You know, we talked about Psycho and we talked about Silence of the Lambs, and you know, so you know, when you're acting up against a kind of villain that's taking up a lot of the screen,
yeah,
maybe it's easy to overlook the counterfoil part.
That's, yeah. And it's, you know, it's just as hard, it's just as difficult for them to get their bits right. You know, I think Richard's bit has been full of praise for Natalia. I think she's awesome in it. But, you know, I think, you know, you do suffer in terms of reviews. I think not in terms of people who see it professionally or who watch it, you know. I think the thing is, if anyone ever commented that she wasn't, you know, keeping up with him, and no one said anything like that, you know, that you realise how strong her performance is, you know, because Richard's, I think, so one thing we've had from every single review, people have gone on about how it's just an outstanding performance he does. You know, I'm really proud of that, that he's, you know, that we got that from him, and that, well, he delivered it as well. You know, it's just been great. You know, you can see it on the, you can see it when we were shooting. You know, a couple of scenes you just would just, you know, one or two takes, and you're going, wow, that is great. I mean, there's a scene that I, you know, you'll see that where he's just given her clothes back, and I think it's as, you know, it's up there with anything that Anthony Hopkins does. You know, it's just brilliant. It's just, you know, and I think that was wild, like one or two takes, and it's like, thank you very much, move on. And that's what Richard's like the whole time. It's brilliant.
Yeah,
he deserves a lot more lead parts than he gets.
I mean he's I think he's shown, I mean, I think particularly with Doomhead and you know, now your film, you know, getting more lead parts, and I think he's definitely an actor that needs to have more lead parts. He's obviously done a lot of supporting roles in his career, but he usually is a scene stealer in the in the many films he pops up in, you know.
Yeah, I think hopefully, you know, but just want this to make sure we get this out in front of people and they see it, because I think, you know, there's a lot, you should get a lot from Richard in this, you know. I think hopefully it will help push him on to some more, yeah, you know, lead parts as well, because he certainly deserves it. Yeah.
It does certainly seem to be, I mean, you mentioned some of the reviews that have come out, and it does certainly seem to be a recurring theme of the reviews of mentioning the caliber of the acting from Richard, from Natalia, and also from Joe Woodcock, who plays Natalia's character, Katia's best friend, Lucy. That seems to be the thing that is most noted again and again in the reviews I have seen from the movie.
I was just going to do a spoiler then, which I shouldn't do, but Joe was brilliant. So, I mean, she got... Well, I said to Joe, you know, it's like when you've got a film that's incredibly dark, it's, you know, you need someone to bring a bit of heart and a bit of light into the film, and she's brilliant at that. And the other thing that's quite nice is she does an Australian accent, which no one's mentioned that it's not right, and I didn't think, well, I thought it was brilliant, you know. So, but I think it always worries slightly when you've got an actor doing an accent and you're not that good at the accents yourself, that you go, is it right? It sounds right, but, you know. But we haven't had any Australians come back to us yet with anything, so I think she nailed that.
That's good. Yeah, there's nothing worse than watching a movie and you've got an actor who's clearly not from the country and that does a really bad attempt.
Scotty in Star Trek.
yes, I've watched many films with stabs at Scottish accents that are on various levels of hilarious.
Mel Gibson's, that must be one of your favourites.
Yeah, no, it's a classic. It's mind you, we also give the world Sean Connery, who's minced the accents of other people, so we can't complain too much.
That's true. Does he ever do an accent, though, Sean Connery?
Actually, no. Generally not. I think the only film he tried an accent was The Untouchables, where he tried an Irish accent and failed miserably. But the rest of the movies he's in, no matter what nation he's playing, generally does the Sean Connery voice.
Yeah. I think one thing I'm also quite proud about the film is that we try, you know, we've been quite, I think, especially after we cast Richard, we would, you know, and he... Rich can do other accents if you want. We decided to stick with his American accent.
Yeah.
We kind of then decided with the rest of the cast, make a London film. We're going to make a London film without one sort of like native London accent. in the whole film, you know, and I think that's what every city is like, really, every major city, you know, there's a tendency, you know, when you're making a film in, you know, a London film, everyone's going to be sort of like doing London gang speak and this, that and the other, and we've kind of made our whole film sort of people, sort of immigrants or people have moved and they're not necessarily from the same country, but we've got, you know, Scottish accents, we've got, you know, Brummie accents, we've got, you know, there's not a London accent in it, I don't think.
Yeah.
We've kind of made a conscious choice of that, you know, we wanted to get that feeling, you know, that I think it's part of the idea of the fact of how vulnerable you are if you're an immigrant, that, you know, and that's obviously what happens to Katya, and the fact that, you know, she moved from Poland, no one knows where she is, so that's where this can happen to her. But I think immigrants tend to have a lot more vulnerability.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a political film, but it is, you know, I think it's fair to put it as an underlying theme. But, you know, it's
kind of the immigrant experience. So, and you just wanted to take it away from being that kind of like marking it down as like a kind of London film, I don't know, one of those kind of things.
Yeah. I wanted to make a London film, but not a London film, if you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think it's a true reflection of London. It's like, I know a lot of my friends down here from everywhere, from Derby, they're from, you know, Argentina, you know, and I think that's what London and that's what big cities are like, you know, and I think in film, just, you know, it's like you make Notting Hill, you know, and there's, you know, everyone's got a nice white middle-class accent, you know, and I think that's not...
Yeah, that's not a big city, is it? It's not, not a true reflection.
It's a true, you know, a true reflection is just, it's a place people, by people from everywhere. That's what makes a city so fantastic and vibrant, really, you know, I think.
Excellent. Yeah.
Okay, it's not a political, it wasn't a political thing, but it was a thought that we thought, well, I think it's worth, you know, underpinning in the film, you know, through our casting.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned a little while ago that you have a background in commercials, advertising, directing commercials and stuff, and you did that for a long time. You know, I believe you've done that for like 20 years or so. Was a feature film always in there? Did you always think one day I'm going to make a feature film?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I started and did commercials completely by accident. I went to, not film school, I went to St. Martin's School of Art and I did a film on a fine art course there. And I came out, I knew I wanted to work in film, and it was literally the first job I got was a runner in a post-production house that did TV commercials. And that's kind of, you know, and I started as a runner and then I went on and, actually, it's longer than 20 years because I started cutting on film, although still working on film when I started there. So it's still moviolas and, you know, splicing things together with tape. So, you know, in those days you did a proper sort of apprenticeship. You were a second assistant and a first assistant. But the good thing about that is that you don't have nowadays with working on computers and cutting on Avid or Premiere or whatever it is. It's a very isolated thing now. And when I first started, there was a group of you, there were three of you in, with an editor who you were watching working the whole time. I think that's brilliant training. I don't think people get to see that anymore, which is a bit of a shame. Do you know what I mean? Nowadays it's like, you know, there's an editor who's in there on his thing. You might have an assistant, but he won't be in the room the whole time. Mm-hmm. With him watching him work and picking up little tricks and, you know, trying to understand what he's doing, how he's cutting and things. So, yeah, that was good. So I did that, and then I made a short film that I directed after being editing for a couple of years, and that did well at one British Short Film Festival, and that got me some gigs directing commercials. But I've always, you know, I've always wanted to make a film, and I think we've kind of pushed more in the last, from writing and getting ideas going the last probably 10, 15 years. And, you know, like I said, we had another project and then we moved on to this one, and, you know, I think we just stuck with it until we got it bloody made, because it's, you know, it's hard if haven't got a big name.
Yeah,
when you're a first time director, it's tough to raise the money, you know, it's very tough to get off the ground, especially if you don't get, you know, funding from any sort of, like, you know, the government things, you know, just to raise a whole load of money from scratch to make a film is really tough. But, you know, we did that through, you know, a lot of hard work. So yeah, But no, I always wanted to make a film. I'm not dissing commercials. It's a good, it's been good fun. I've travelled the world, done lots of fun things, but I've always wanted to make a film. And if I could spend the rest of my life now making features and non-form stuff, I'd be very happy.
Yeah.
I was going to say, one of the nicest things, one of my friends, Billy, who's a director, who started in commercials as well, he said, the nice thing, when you're doing commercials, obviously, you imagine it, you've got a client there, you've got an agency there, you've got about 10 people standing behind looking at the playback for everything you shoot, and just you've got to pass it by them. And that's just the absolute joy of doing a feature film, especially if you've written it yourself, and it's an independent film, is that literally you shoot it, you go, well, I think I'm happy with that, and you just move on. You don't have to turn around and get someone else to say it's okay, or can you do it this way or that way. It's just, that's just an absolute joy after years of commercials to be able to do that.
Excellent. That sounds, Was there anything else that was particularly different about the process of directing, being a director on a feature and being a director on a commercial? But besides the fact that you get to, move on when you want to move on, you don't have to pass it by a million people.
Oh, there's loads of things. I was just saying, in commercials, you're talking about time all the time. So you're talking in, you're talking about 30-second commercial with probably, 18 shots in it, and all those different shots have got to be timed. Whereas you have a lot more free, so you're not watching the time all the time. That's one thing. But I think the big joy and the best thing about it is working with actors and really working on performance. You're doing performances, and you're trying to get good stuff out of actors when you're doing a commercial. But it's a whole different thing when it's a feature. Really get to explore the characters, and you really get to work with your actors, and a huge degree of trust that you have to have, between each other as well. So, that's lovely. Hardest thing, I think, is just the length of time it takes. And I think, especially when if you're on a low budget production, you're really pushing the hours. So, although this was just over 4 weeks, there was a lot of, quite a few night shoots in that. And at the end of it, you're quite exhausted. You're doing 6 day weeks and incredibly long days in those time, and also switching between day and night shoots. So that was pretty exhausting. That was hard work.
Good. Sounds like very long days.
You forget the pain very quickly. Though I think after just probably like having an operation. God, I'd never do that again. But this thing of a couple of weeks after, you can't wait to do it again. One thing, but don't feel quite so tired. But it takes a lot of stamina. I think you need a really good crew around you as well, because maybe it's just me because it's my first one, but there are a couple of times through, not an every day, but especially when you get towards the end of the shoot, you need your crew to pick you up a little bit. You need your lighting cameraman maybe to come up with a bit of help here and there in terms of we're looking at this cell, we're shooting this, a lot of it happens in one location in the cell, and I can't think of another idea for an angle on this bloody thing now, because you're trying to keep something in a very small contained space visually interesting. So, I think that got a bit hard. But I think we've got a good crew around. They kind of lift each other and drag each other through it. It was, can't wait to do it again.
Yeah, having talked to a few filmmakers who are indie filmmakers and who are working on either their first or second feature, I've noticed that's a recurring theme on the podcast of, people talk about the necessity of having a good crew around you. And that's why a lot of people seem to use kind of the same lighting guys, camera guys, because there's that trust that gets built over the period of filmmaking.
Yeah. And actually you sometimes see when certain directors keep using the same actors again, and part of you goes, why are you doing that? And so you work with someone, Richard Natale, you go, I'd have either you just like I'm back in the shot. In fact, I might make them the next film, try and write them into it, because they're just so brilliant. You get a great relationship, great working relationship with people. You want to do it again with them, basically.
Yeah. So you said that right from the off, before getting into commercials, you always had a feature in mind. Was that feature always going to be a horror? Is that the genre that you've always
I think it is. I mean, even commercials, actually, funny enough, I've done a lot of comedy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, even my short film was quite dark, and that was, it's called Cold Feet. It's actually one of the things, that was 20 years ago now, but I should probably get that back out seen again, because I think it's probably still stand up okay. But that was dark, yeah. That was based on, you know, those, I can't remember what they call them now, but it's sort of mystery things you go, oh, there's a bloke in a room, he's hanging by the neck, all the doors and windows are closed.
Oh, yeah.
Inside, how did he die?
Yeah, kind of pull through mysteries.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a puddle of water under him. And basically, so I wrote this short film that's completely dialogue free. So it's a silent movie in a way, called Cold Feet. And it's about a guy who gets a large block of ice into his room and tries to commit suicide with it. Now, I don't know if you've ever worked at to figure out how long it would take to get a giant block of ice to melt, but it's not very easy. And it, you know. So it turns into a sort of very black comedy of one man's trials and tribulations to try and commit suicide. So yeah, it's quite dark still. But yeah, I think I've always been drawn to that. I think it's a love of Hitchcock, basically. I've always, you know.
Yeah. Would you say that he's your main directorial influence?
Sorry?
Would you say that he's your main directorial influence? And do you have others that you particularly draw from?
Well, obviously, you know, there's a huge one like, you know, Scorsese, but Hitchcock, I think, is my favourite director of all time. And I think it's just because, I think Psycho was the first film I remember watching, understanding, getting out there, just knowing that there was someone behind it directing it. Do you know what I mean? Not that it's clumsy or anything, but just that it's so inventive and clever, and you've got some, like, the so abstract, like the showering scene in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's so much about the direction. I think that's what maybe would be a director was watching Psycho, quite honestly. I think that's what got me going, that's what I'd like to do. So I think I've always got a love for Hitchcock because of that, really. But yeah. I think Hitchcock's, you know, Scorsese, Coppola, probably my main influences. One of the ones I've never got is Kubrick, and I know everyone loves Kubrick. I've never had the same love for Kubrick as everyone else has. Are you a Kubrick fan? Everyone seems to be.
Yes. The Shining is my favourite movie. I
love The Shining. I really love The Shining.
Big love for Kubrick, but. Yeah,
it's the only one I love of his. I just, you know, the others, you know, I like, and they're clever and they're smart. They don't grab me in the same way. I don't know why, really.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, yeah, it's just one of those things. I won't smite you for not liking Kubrick. You know,
good. I don't know what it is. It's just, you know, just it never grounds you. Like, people are passionate about it, you know, and I can understand. I can see the talent.
Yeah.
I don't know, his films don't
yeah.
I think it's a bit like Christopher Nolan. I'm not a huge Christopher Nolan fan. I know people are really passionate about him as well, and I find his work a bit I think it's something I find a bit cool about Kubrick and about Nolan. Do you know what I mean? That,
yeah. Yes, I mean, like, I've had a lot of conversations with people about both the directors who I am a big fan of, but I understand what people's kind of beef with them is about their films being sort of over intellectualized and cold and impersonal. So I can see that viewpoint, you know. But yeah, no, there does seem to be a lot of people seem to love both those directors, and a lot of people are just left cold by them.
I love Sam Raimi as well. I wish he'd direct more stuff. I don't know what's happened to him. He seems to produce more now, but...
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what the...
It's like Evil Dead, when it came out at that point, was one of the sort of like the most wildly creative films around at that time, I think, really. It's done a couple of other quite good ones, but...
I think, like, Drag Me to Hell is the last Sam Raimi film I can remember, and that's, like, 2009, I think.
Yeah,
of the ones he's directed, and Drag Me to Hell. I mean, it splits people, but I always thought it was quite a fun movie.
Yeah, I think, you know, because it is, you know, I think you've got to take it as a good genre piece, basically, and it's really well executed genre piece. I think, you know, But I don't know what, you know, because he did do the super, the Spider-Mans, didn't he?
Yes, he did the Spider-Man trilogy.
And that's like when it went off the rails as well.
Well, I think Spider-Man 3 is a bit of a mess. The trilogy ended on a bit of a mess, but there's some good stuff there as well. I don't know why he has decided to take a step back from direction and just be a producer on various things. But I would certainly, like you, love to see a new Sam Raimi picture.
Yeah, and Kevin Smith as well. Is he going to do something? Because I really, what's the horror thing he did recently that was all that really dark film? Oh, that was brilliant.
He recently did a horror comedy that came out a couple of years back called Yoga Hosers.
I've seen that one. What's that called?
Yoga Hosers.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. It's a kind of a kind of horror comedy done in that kind of style of like those 80s kind of family horrors like Gremlins and stuff, you know, like but yeah, it was screened at the Edinburgh Film Festival a couple of years back, I think, like,
yeah, he's a filmmaker I really like. He just talks sense all the time.
Yeah,
Tarantino I love as well, but I think he's gone off the boil a bit for me as well from probably a most brilliant start. Yeah, I think Pulp Fiction has been one of my favourite films of the past sort of like 20 years or so. It's just outstanding.
I absolutely agree with that. That's a fantastic film and definitely up there with my favourites.
Mm-hmm. Coen Brothers as well, to mention them. I love Coen Brothers as well. They can be a bit patchy, but
I think they produce quite a lot of movies. They direct quite a lot of movies. I think that's, you know, like...
They're just always working on it.
Can't be great all the time.
Everything can't be great. But I think, do you like Hudsucker Proxy? I love Hudsucker Proxy.
Yeah. The Coen brothers, again, there's lots of people who evangelize over certain movies. I'm a bit of a Big Lebowski guy. I know some Fargo's a favorite for a lot, Miller's Crossing, Hudsucker Proxy.
I love Hudsucker, but I think Hudsucker was my favorite, and Raising Arizona, I think, is still that's what brilliant film that is.
They've covered a lot of genres, but they've never done a horror. The Coens, maybe a Coens horror movie would be interesting.
That would be great.
Yeah.
Also, I guess Fargo's probably about the closest. That's not really a horror. That's a psychological thriller, isn't it?
Yeah, that's probably about it.
I love that balance they get between things being really horrific and then being able to pull off something quite funny. The same character, it's just brilliant.
Going back to your horrors, what is the plans now? I mean, I know you're going to be still touring with Perfect Skin. I know it's going to other festivals in France and Italy. But will you restart your film Squatters, or are you going to go into a different movie, or what's the?
I'm just going to go into a different movie. I'd like to do. There's a reimagining of another 1960s. Really dark thriller that no one else has ever heard of, so I won't mention it, which is great. it's kind of around that same time as whatever happened to Baby Jane, but it's set in England, and it's really interesting. It's a kind of cuckoo in the nest thing. It's a sort of psychopath in the nest, basically. Wow. It's these women who invite this man into their home for different reasons, and they all kind of fall in love with him for different reasons, from the sort of grandmother figure down to the housemaid who it was in the original. It's just really, really dark film with a really odd ending. So I'd quite like to have a look at doing a reimagining that. I want to kind of reset that possibly in America or LA. Mm-hmm. So instead of having a sort of like rich old woman in it, you've got a sort of fading Hollywood actress. Because you need someone that holds a position of power in that sort of matriarchal family unit to make that story work. There's that, and I've also got a script in from my co-writer, Dusan, which is a serial killer film set in Serbia, which I haven't actually, I'm going to read tonight, hopefully, which I'm really looking forward to. So I'm seeing if there's going to be, hopefully, I'd love to work with Dusan again. So, you know, if I like that project, we'll try and pick that up and start running with that one, I think.
So it's the one that's the kind of reimagining of the 60s thrillers is the one you're looking to get up and running now. Is that where?
No, I think I'm trying to try and get the one with Dusan going now, and then trying to and also going to try and get Dusan to try and work with me on the script with this one as well. But I think Dusan's as a script is ready to go. So if I, you know, if I like it, hopefully it might be a little bit of rewriting, but yeah, it'd be nice to be able to get a project that's ready to go right now. Cause I think, you know, it's nice to keep the momentum going. I think, you know, so, you know, while people are watching your film, it's also always nice to talk about something you've got in your pocket at the same time.
Yeah.
I made that mistake when I made my short film.
Cold Feet one.
And we got called into my working title to come in and have a meeting. If we've got anything to work on, and literally we didn't. So we kind of put a mood board together for an idea for a film. We kind of went in and hopefully try and pitch that, which probably wasn't the best thing to do. So yeah, they didn't take us on for a project, a working title. So yeah, I think we need to get, it's always good to have something good ready to push on with, I think, for your next project. So yeah. Fingers crossed, I think we've got, work with Dusan's script first, and then hopefully work with Dusan and get the other script ready by the end of this year, beginning of early next year.
Can you reveal the title of Dusan's script, or is that something you're going to keep under your hat?
I'm going to keep under my hat for the moment.
Right.
Until we both think we want to run with it, yeah. But yeah, fingers crossed on that. The other thing, did you want to know anything about the tattooing at all? What we had to do there?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Some of the people might want to know, just because the team we put together in London was with a tattoo artist called Mo Coppoletta, who runs a company called The Family Business. So we went to him, and he read the script. He absolutely, you know, he got it straight away. And he also kind of, it's nice talking to someone from a completely different creative
background
area. Yeah, background, but you know, better to talk to them about character and then doing something creative with it. You know, that's really like, that's one of the nicest parts of all the pre-production was that, you know, coming up with the ideas for the tattoos and what sort of direction, but then creatively just letting, you know, because you kind of let him become Bob in a way, going like, if you could do, you know, this, because they never get there. It's a bit like being a commercials director, being a tattoo artist. You know, you get someone come in, sometimes a great nice project, some of the really shit project, you know, that you've got to try and make the best out of. So they're kind of, you know, in a way they're a bit like me, you know, it's nice to get a completely blank canvas, you know, without having a client, you know, sticking their oar in and going like, you know, if you wanted to do this, what would you do? But their own restraints was just trying to make it work within the character. So they came up with wanting to have this sort of what I call memento mori, which is, you know, this sort of slightly view of it's all about mortality. So all these tattoos that come about are all about, in a way, his mortality and her mortality. And it was just really nice to talk about. And they've done an absolutely stunning job on the tattoos, you know, in the time we had as well. To try to come up with a, you know, a whole bodysuit is a lot of work. And then they had, on top of that, they also had to do Bob as well, so he had to have a lot of tattoos. Lucy, Joe's character, also had to have tattoos as well. So there's an awful lot of tattoo work. And that, if I was going to say anything about the worst part of the film, that the tattoo makeup side of it was the most difficult and complex. When we're at
how long roughly did that take to get together, like all the tattoos, like the, you know, the finished product for the three?
Well, putting on or designing and everything.
Design and everything.
Designing, I think, was probably about, it wasn't huge, I think it was about 6 to 8 weeks they did it in, which was pretty impressive, really. But what Mo did in the end was he put together a team of four artists to work on it, which is good in a way, because if you think, you know, not, you do want different feels to the different tattoos, because Bob's tattoos were from a different era and a different style to the ones that he's creating on Lucy. And same with Joe had you know, was a sort of collector of tattoos, so she'd have tattoos from like trips to here or trips to there. So, you know, she wasn't someone had tattoos just by one artist. So yeah. That was really good. But I think that helped an awful lot time wise. But on the set, trying to put them on, because when people tell you that, you know, those these tattoos are going, it's just the same, you know, those kids' ones you had, you just put water on and they come on like that, but better. You know, that sounds really easy. But if you imagine having to do a full body suit, yeah. Those, and you imagine you have to then cut them down into sizes that are workable with, and then you have to, when it's a large design, get them to match up.
I can only imagine how time consuming that must be.
It was, I think she, well, I think one day, there's a big day which also involves prosthetics as well. I think she was in, I think they started on at 5 or 6 in the morning, and I don't think we saw her till 4 or 5 in the afternoon. So yeah, that was a long day of waiting. And I think makeup as well, much of that, you know, I love them, they're really great, but you know when people try to be helpful?
Yes.
And you're going, oh, it's only a bit, probably an hour, and you come back and it's an hour, it's like, maybe another half an hour, and you go, okay, there's another half an hour, it's like, they were great, but it's like, just say it's going to be 12 hours, we can go out and have a coffee, have a lunch, you know, we'll come back, we'll see you later.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it was so bad on Monday that Natalia did actually faint at one point. I think
just wow. Sort of,
yeah. I think that was 9 hour day, yeah.
It very much sounds like it.
Yeah, I think if someone said to you know that, I think that's one of the things someone said to you, would you do another film with tattoos in it? I'd be nope.
So you've done your tattoo movie, that's it.
Yeah, exactly. No more. But yeah. But they were brilliant. We had brilliant prosthetics team behind it as well. And like I said, the makeup, everyone was great, but God, it was hard work. A lot harder work than I thought. And even even the early process stage, the drawing bit was great, but then if you imagine trying to size all these different tattoos and get the sizes exactly right on a human being, which isn't a nice straight piece of paper, you know, it's just a complicated shape, and then try to get it all to match up. It was tough. But anyway, it's done. I think the results, you know, I think she looks stunning in it. So it was all worth it in the end.
Yeah. And will you be touring with the movie, or are you busy on the other projects? Will you be going to the
I'm going to Paris. I'm not going to the North one, and I might go to the Italian one. If not, I might let my producer Fiona go. The one in Nantes, they only wanted to see Richard. They asked Richard if Richard could come, and he said no, and they didn't forward the invitation to me after Richard said he wasn't free. So, yeah.
Seems a bit cruel. Okay.
I know, but hey, he's like, you know, he's. I think everyone's just, especially in the horror community, I think it's part in 31 seems to be pretty well known, really.
It is widely known. Richard appeared at Edinburgh Horror Con a few months back, and 31 did seem to be the main part of the Q&A that was done there.
I can imagine there's an awful lot of people have had Doomhead tattoos done as well. I don't know if you've seen those. You go on the internet, there seems to be a growing number of Doomhead tattoos that people have done to themselves. A varying quality. Some of them great. Some of them not so good.
Well, so
that must be really weird. You imagine that for Richard. It's like
there must be
one. That's got to be freaky, isn't it? You think some woman coming up to you and showing a thigh tattoo with your face on it. It's sort of like, you know,
it must be a very interesting experience.
It's just going to be the maddest thing in the world, isn't it? It's bad enough when you do someone's name, isn't it, without someone's face on that? But yeah, crazy.
Well, on that random note, I wish you the best of luck at the other festivals. I'm sure it will attract as many good reviews as it did at Fright Fest, and I hope this project with Dusan comes together soon, and I hope to check out both.
Okay, well, I'm going to try and get into Dead by Dawn. If you know anybody down there, put in a good word for us, so hopefully maybe we'll see you at that.
Okay, that'd be great.
All right, so give me a shout if we get in. Let's meet up and have a beer.
Okay, cool.
All right. Thanks, Scott.
That was my guest, Kevin Chicken there, who I'd like to thank once again for appearing on this latest episode of New Horror Express. Hopefully we can also have him on the show again at some time. Maybe we can even do the interview live from the film house over that beer if that arises. Will it arise? Well, you'll just have to tune in and find out. Anyway, I'd also like to thank you, listener, for checking out this newest episode of the show. If you want to check out all previous episodes of the show, you can do on iTunes and Stitcher, where you can rate, review, and subscribe to us. We would greatly appreciate if you gave us a review. And, you know, like, if you didn't like the show, maybe don't rate it. Maybe don't review it. But if you did, please, we recommend that you do. No, it's fine. It's fine. Honest opinions are, of course, welcome. You can also give us a like on Facebook, as well as following us on Twitter. Please do tune in 2 weeks' time, not a month's time, 2 weeks' time, for my latest interview, this time with director Robert Krasowski. Well, that is all for now, listener. See you in 2 weeks.